This is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Take a look at Fortune's list of the top 100 companies in America, and right there at number 82 is Boston-based Liberty Mutual Insurance Group. The company posted more than $33 billion in revenue last year, and by that measure, Liberty Mutual is bigger than Google, Oracle, or Time Warner.
But not so big as, say, super heavyweight Exxon Mobil, which posted an eye-popping $355 billion in revenue in 2011. And for his efforts, Exxon CEO Rex Tillerson received a total pay package worth $25.2 million.
Now, Liberty Mutual is a big company, but obviously it's not Exxon Mobil big. And yet, it turns out the insurance group gave its former CEO, Edmund Kelly, a total pay package worth almost $50 million a year, twice as much as Tillerson earned at Exxon.
There's been a lot of recent scrutiny of executive compensation in corporate America, but the Liberty Mutual story is a new wrinkle. Unlike ExxonMobil, Liberty Mutual is not a publicly traded company. There's no stock symbol for it. It is exactly what its name implies, a mutual company owned by its policyholders, where surplus profits are either to be reinvested in the company or paid as dividends to the customers.
Which is why many people are now asking for a major American company owned by those whom it serves. Is $50 million a year a fair or excessive CEO pay package? Is that the price a company must pay to net the leadership talent to build a company like Liberty Mutual? And how do we really measure the value a CEO brings to a mutual company that may not have to be as transparent as, say, a publicly traded one? And is there a deeper story here, especially in the close-knit Boston business community, about the fiduciary responsibility of the board of directors that approved the package? Call us with your thoughts at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, joining us now is Elizabeth Keating. She's a lecturer in accounting at Boston University and Boston College. She specializes in executive compensation in nonprofit organizations. Elizabeth Keating, welcome to Radio Boston.
I'm glad to be here.
Great to have you. Also with us is Jay Lorsch. He's professor of human relations at Harvard Business School and author of Back to the Drawing Board, Designing Boards for a Complex World. Professor Lorsch, welcome to Back to Radio Boston.
It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you. Let me say first and foremost that we contacted Liberty Mutual for comment, and they declined to give us one today. And I should also add that there are a couple things about this story that no one seems to dispute. One is that when Edmund Kelly first joined Liberty Mutual, the company was struggling financially, and he definitely turned it around. This is a very profitable, as we said, Fortune 100 company today. So it's not necessarily his performance that's come under scrutiny, but rather what he was paid to bring about that performance. So Elizabeth Keating, let me start with you. When it comes to mutually held companies, these so-called mutual companies, of which Liberty Mutual is one of them, how does Kelly's pay package compare with others?
Well, the first thing to start with is it's quite difficult. It's not very apparent at all. There's no sort of market for publicly disclosing information on executive compensation. So it's not something that the public can easily discern what someone's being paid. And a mutual corporation is different from a publicly traded one in that there's no stock. So for a large number of CEOs, stock and stock options would be a significant part of their pay package. So instead, you would expect a CEO of a mutual insurance company to be paid cash, and that cash payout might not be consistent with just looking at this year's profits, but rather would be looking at how they've performed over a period of time. So one of the issues here is something called deferred compensation. Is the compensation from this year actually all related to this year's performance?
Okay, so we'll get back to that in just a second because it's an important set of questions to tackle. But let me also ask you, and then Professor Lorsch, I'd like to get your thoughts on this too. Liberty Mutual, as a mutual insurance group, is not subject to federal regulations that would apply to publicly traded companies.
That's correct.
Does any sort of regulation apply to them at the state level, for example?
Right. So any type of insurance company, publicly traded or not, is subject to regulation by the states in which they're chartered. And so Liberty Mutual is certainly regulated by different state insurance ones, including the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Are there any regulatory issues regarding compensation? I mean, can the state say you can and can't pay a certain amount?
On that, I don't think they're very directive. There's certainly limits on the types of ways that someone could be paid, but on the quantity, Without getting into sort of more individual conversations regulators have had, there's no sort of easy way to say.
Okay, so just want to check the regulatory landscape here.
Right.
Professor Lourish, your first thoughts about, there's a great hue and cry that came out over the past month when Ted Kelly's compensation was revealed in the Boston Globe. We should say that Kelly retired as CEO from Liberty Mutual last year. He now serves as the head of the board of directors. But your first thoughts about, first of all, the reaction and whether or not was his compensation quote-unquote appropriate?
Well, the question whether it's appropriate is something we can come back to, but my first reaction was to check out whether this was payment for 1 year or over several years. And my understanding is this pay that he got in 1 year was for performance over several years. And it's very similar to the situation that Grasso faced at the New York Stock Exchange several years ago when it turned out that the money he'd gotten was for a whole 40-year career. Mm-hmm. So one of the problems here for sure is that the board of directors or whoever announces this compensation wasn't very clear about what they were paying for, and they created a huge furor. Maybe it would have been a furor anyway, but at least they exaggerated the problem by leaving us with the impression that it was for only 1 year.
Well, Kelly, apparently in the Boston Globe this weekend, clarified and said his annual compensation was closer to $13 to $15 million a year. But then there was that issue of the deferred compensation that Elizabeth Keating pointed out. But nevertheless, I mean, I take your point about, was it prorated over time? Was it a big lump sum? But what about this issue of mutual companies and where their fiduciary responsibility lies when it comes to what they do with all these excess profits? Should it be going to paying CEOs tens of millions of dollars?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a question for the policyholders to decide. And one of the questions you got to ask yourself, I think, is who elects these directors? And if it's the policyholders that elect the directors, then maybe there's something wrong with the governance of the institution.
Is there a form? I mean, Elizabeth Keating, do you know? Because here's the thing. For example, we saw just this past month that there are mechanisms by which stockholders in publicly traded companies can register either their approval or disapproval of compensation for CEOs. We saw that with the Citi Corporation, where CEO Vikram Pandit was supposed to, well, it had been suggested he get a $15 million pay raise from his $1 compensation years ago. And quite frankly, there was a shareholder revolt saying, no, more than 55% of shareholders said we don't approve of that. Are there similar mechanisms within the structure of a mutual company?
They're generally not. And to boot, the policyholder can choose not to renew their policy, but there isn't any way to communicate publicly your displeasure like there would be selling your shares, for example.
Okay. Well, so let's talk a little bit more about some of the details within the Liberty Mutual story, which I think some of them had been very novel to me. That, first of all, this idea that part of Mr. Kelly's compensation came in the form of what they were calling phantom stock. Mm-hmm. That, we've all heard that CEOs get stock options in publicly traded companies. Of course, Liberty Mutual, as a non-public group, didn't have stock per se, but they basically created a valuation for the company by which they were going to say, okay, here's what if we were to have stock, we'd say that its current value is X now, and then if you do well, we're going to see what the future value of this fake stock is, and then pay that to you. I mean, Jay Lourish, is that a common thing? Had you heard about that before?
Well, it's the kind of thing that companies do, but I think my own judgment is it's not necessarily a very wise thing to do.
Why?
Well, because you're creating this fake metric in terms of stock price. Why not go directly to the question of what have you produced and what's it worth to the policyholders? I mean, I just think it's complicating the whole thing and leads to the kind of complexity they found themselves in.
Hmm. Elizabeth Keating, your thoughts on that?
Right. So a question is, this company, as you said, was clearly in financial distress. It turned itself around. One of the things it needed to do was to attract the kind of person that would be willing to take a large risk to come to this company to try to turn it around. And if he did well, get a large benefit, but very likely might get a very little in the form of compensation. So you want to structure something that clearly has a lot of upside potential. So you can see the attractiveness in trying to structure a stock or stock-like mechanism to attract somebody to come, because that's very commonly what these turnaround people would be offered in the for-profit sector. And so there is some natural understanding by the person being hired what the form of compensation might be and the kinds of things that would lead to increased pay. based on improved performance in the company.
But the problem with the phantom stock, at least that one of them that that seems to me, is that it's not stock. I mean,
right.
They're not actually getting stock. It ultimately has to be paid out as cash.
Right, but I mean, that a lot of people who get paid stock then turn around and sell it and get paid out cash. I think the question is, how do you determine what the price is for the phantom stock, and might that phantom stock price actually track what a real stock price might track? And I think there've been tracking stocks in other times, and Professor Lorsch can speak to this, where the tracking stock, in fact, doesn't do a good job of emulating what the stock price would be.
Professor Lorsch?
I mean, that's the problem. I mean, you just create an unnecessary complication. If you want to give him an incentive for turning around performance, then tie it to the economic performance of the company. Don't create this other noise in the system, which is essentially what the phantom stock is.
And by all measures, it seems that the actual performance of the company has been very good.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm not arguing they shouldn't have gotten the money. I'm just saying put it on a metric which the policyholders can understand and can relate to. Don't complicate it.
We're talking about executive compensation in mutual companies, and specifically one of Boston's, or America's, I should say, biggest companies, and that is the Liberty Mutual Insurance Group. Are you a Liberty Mutual policyholder, and what was your reaction when you heard that former CEO Ted Kelly was paid roughly, in a total compensation package, $50 million a year, and that made him one of the largest or best paid CEOs in the country? Does it seem to make sense to you that CEOs of mutual groups, mutual companies, would be paid similar wages and salaries and packages as those in America's largest publicly traded companies? And when it comes to this bigger question of how much is too much for an executive to be paid, do you have an answer to that? Or maybe is that a tougher thing for us to pin down than we'd like to think? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm speaking with Elizabeth Keating. She is a lecturer in accounting at Boston University and Boston College, and also with Jay Lorsch. He's professor of human relations at Harvard Business School and chairman of the Harvard Business School Global Corporate Governance Initiative. And he's also faculty chairman of the Executive Education and Corporate Governance Series. So, Professor Lorsch, let me take a step back here, because one of the things that, Brian McGrory, columnist in the Boston Globe, really sort of He ran with this over a series of four columns and did own original reporting. And I think what he did very well is reflect some of the tensions and feelings that people who aren't CEOs have when they read the headline here. And that is this sense that, first of all, what role does a board have here? Because McGrory said that part of the problem, he thinks, is that so many people on the board of directors at Liberty Mutual, they're basically friends. They know each other. They might sit on the boards of their fellows' companies, and they're essentially deciding each other's pay. I mean, that's not uncommon, is it?
Well, it is uncommon. It's less and less common in the world of publicly owned companies. And I find myself kind of in a curious position, because the world I live in is publicly owned companies, and they're always criticized. Are quite often criticized. You mentioned Citigroup, which is a good example. But the fact of the matter is, we're on the side of the good guys now, because at least in publicly owned companies, you've got some pretty strict rules. Everybody on the compensation committee has to be, quote, independent. That is, should have no other relationship with the CEO. I'm not sure that's true in a mutual company. Mm-hmm. There's this whole question that you referred to earlier of say on pay, which was part of the Dodd-Frank bill, which says the shareholders have a right to vote periodically on the compensation of the senior executives. That's kind of a safeguard. It may not be working perfectly, but it sure is working better than what you've got in these other kinds of companies.
Elizabeth Keating, your thoughts on that?
Yes, no, I totally agree with Jay on this one.
That there should be more transparency and rules into who can serve on a board of a mutual company?
Right. So right now, the for-profit industry is actually ahead in creating a system that is more transparent and gives more input into what's an appropriate form of compensation and what are appropriate board relationships. So we've really done a good job of stopping in for-profit companies of having these interlocking boards, which is what's being surfaced here at Liberty Mutual.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's another reason why, for example, Brian McGrory quoted an unnamed source who said that one of the things that that board members might do is look at the pay package of people running similar companies and say, you know, unofficially, we're going to peg your CEO, your pay to the 75th percentile of your colleagues. And so, but the effectiveness of that is, or the effect of that, I should say, is that it basically just ratchets up pay over time. Is that true, Jay Lorch? Is that a practice? Or
yes,
it is.
That's one of the things that I don't like about compensation in public companies. There is this whole notion of what Warren Buffett calls ratcheting up. You know, and there's this idea that no board wants to have its CEO in the bottom half, right? So we end up with all the CEOs looking like the children in Lake Wobegon. They're all above average, and that can't be. So that's one of the problems we do have. And I think the idea of making those comparisons is probably a pretty bad idea.
Elizabeth Keaton, did you want to jump in on that?
No, I once again agree, Professor Lorch.
Okay. Well, let's take a quick call here. Daniel's calling from Newton. You're on the air, Daniel.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling because I've followed stocks, and I'm looking at on Yahoo Finance, whatever, you can get to see insider trading, and they give you the last 3-4 months or whatever. And it seems they're all compensating officers, directors, and in options. People get an option at a price of zero or almost zero, and then the same, they get 40,000 shares, and then they transact it the same exact day, and they get this huge capital gain, and it's a way of avoiding paying salary. And it went into effect because they wanted to have the officer's stake in the company be the same as the shareholder. However, that's not the case when you sell it the same day, and it doesn't matter what happens in the future. It's simply a humongous salary giveaway at no income tax rates.
Daniel, let me get to Elizabeth Keating's thought on that. I see you shaking your head.
Right. So there are certainly stock options paid to people who work at for-profits, but for this particular story, stock options is not an issue.
Because
be
they
paid.
Have no stock to give. Okay. Well, Jay Lorch and Elizabeth Keating, there's a bigger picture, there's a bigger question that's looming all over this, and it's one that has been asked many times, but it maintains its relevance to this day, and that is, how much is the true value of the leadership at these companies? I mean, first of all, we use one sort of easy measure that Liberty Mutual, according to the Fortune 100, is the 82nd largest company in America. It is big. But when it comes to how you value the actual leadership of someone like Ted Kelly, one question which Brian McGorry raised, which really kind of stuck with me, was that, you know, we have a pay package which amounts to, in its various forms, $50 million a year. Is there really nobody qualified enough in America who would have done it for $10 million?
It would seem there should be somebody. You know, I think that the executive pay has gotten, you know, it's gotten away from us. And another measure that people use is how much these senior executives get paid compared to the people who work, you know, the average employee. And when it gets up as it is in some of these companies several hundred times, it seems to me, as a reasonable, you know, as a reasonable person, that's too high. Now, I don't think anybody would argue these people shouldn't be compensated and compensated well. But we don't have a benchmark other than these comparisons that you mentioned before. And the problem is that the comparisons keep getting ratcheted up. And so that's one of the reasons why we found ourselves, you know, in the situation we're in. American CEOs of these companies not only get paid more than the average worker by a heck of a lot, but they also get paid much more than their counterparts running similar companies in other parts of the world. So how did all this happen? Well, I think we've created a system which enables them to get very well rewarded, and probably there are many people out there who'd love to do it for quite a bit less. Would they be as good? That's a question you can ponder, but I suspect there are people who would do it for less and be very good at it.
And Elizabeth Keating, I mean, Liberty Mutual is not a not-for-profit company. It's a mutual company.
It's really a third category.
Yeah.
And so what's unique about it is it's owned by its policyholders. And so I think largely when people are now buying policies, they don't understand that part. They overlook the word mutual. And they don't understand that actually they have a set of rights in a role in the organization that's quite different than a policyholder in a for-profit and is different than a stockholder in a for-profit organization. And so when they tend to, you know, they they buy a policy, they get paid some amount back later in the year, which is generally entitled a dividend. But in general, they think that, well, that's a refund on my policy. It's a reduction in what I paid. But it's actually a very different philosophy underlying this organization, which is we as a group of people together are mutually pulled together to provide insurance for some group of us, we're not sure what group of us, that will have some reasons that we will need to file claims over the year. And we'll be in this for a number of years together. And in the end, we're actually sharing in the risks and the benefits of the insurance company. And so this is a relationship. That's what a mutual company is really designed to be, is a relationship-based organization, not a transaction-based organization. And so for-profits increasingly have become transaction-based organizations. And I think today, when people buy policies, they shop for the lowest price. They're very willing to switch from company to company year to year. And so they don't become invested
as an owner.
They're not invested in as an owner in Liberty Mutual. I mean, I think the vast majority of policyholders would be shocked to find it's not a publicly traded company.
So you're saying it's becoming more transactional then?
Right.
Sort of, in spirit.
Right, exactly. So I think the policyholders are not acting as if they are also owners. And it's gotten so large, none of them, each of them having a relatively small policy, none of them feel like they have any impact or say in the organization.
Well, one thing that's come out of this news and the follow-up reporting that has been done in the Boston Globe, and I should once again say that we did contact Liberty Mutual and ask them for their comment, and they declined to give us a comment or statement for today. But one thing that the current CEO of Liberty Mutual, David Long, said in the Boston Globe over the weekend was, in order to avoid any misunderstanding in the future, from now on, they are going to publicly disclose the compensation of their top-level executives. They weren't necessarily bound to do that before because they're not publicly traded. So, Jay Lorsch, I guess the last quick question goes to you on that front, because, you know, we were talking about your experience in the large publicly traded world. They have to do this by virtue of the law. Is transparency for mutual companies part of the solution here to avoid future misunderstanding and maybe bring some further rigor to how compensation is structured?
It would seem to me that it could help. I mean, I'm not saying it's a perfect solution in the world of public companies, but it certainly puts the spotlight on it, and I think it would probably help. I'm struck by the fact that there are other big mutual insurance companies. It would be interesting for the Globe or somebody else to take a look at. Take a company like USAA, which is basically a company that writes insurance for military personnel and veterans. It seems to me they're a much more cleanly governed company than this is. And how do they do it? And how do they disclose compensation? And I bet they do it much more transparently than Liberty Mutual did.
Elizabeth Keating, we've just got a couple seconds, but last quick thought from you. None. it's too big of an issue to wrap up in a few seconds. That's fair enough. Well, Elizabeth Keating is a lecturer in accounting at Boston University and Boston College. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Jay Lorsch, professor of human relations at Harvard Business School and chairman of the Harvard Business School Global Corporate Governance Initiative, also author of Back to the Drawing Board, Designing Boards for a Complex World. Professor Lorsch, true pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, stay with us because coming up, a new exhibit by Alex Katz at the MFA and a real-life Quidditch tournament. Also, let us know your comments on the Liberty Mutual story. We're at radioboston.org. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.